Thank you and welcome to this Thursday 11 a.m. QT Conversations. We love these conversations. They are the highlight of my week because we get to push the boundaries of what we know and what we think about tutoring and the tutoring profession. We tend not to talk about subject specific ideas here because we're a mixed bag, although we are heavily weighted to maths tutors at the moment. So English tutors, if you're out there, come on in, we need you. Georgina, thank you for joining us with your coffee. Very welcome to see you. Very nice to see you here, my darling. So the theme for the conversation today is regulation and tutoring. And so I would love to have a sort of open-ended discussion on that subject with no agenda whatsoever, except that by exploring the lay of the land together, we can come to some shared understandings, which I feel are the most important part. The shared understandings are the things that take us all further. So Ali, you've not been to one of these before, have you? Okay, so basically use the chat as much as you want, although I can't see it because I'm on my phone. And also unmute yourself and dive in whenever you've got an insight, and or I will call on you if I feel like there's something we're talking about that is directly relating to what I know about your tutoring. So the theme of regulation is an interesting one because, to my mind, the fact that tutoring is unregulated defines what we are seeing in the tutoring world today. It defines patchy quality, you could say. So some awesome tutors sitting along some less awesome tutors without a clear understanding of what excellence looks like. We at Qualified Tutor have been striving to define what excellence in tutoring looks like for years now. And what I've done is I've taken all the best tutors I know and drawn a ring around them and sort of retroactively defined what good looks like by looking at who is effective and what they're doing. The other thing that we are beginning to understand is that measuring impact is now becoming something that we really should be doing. We really should be able to measure what's working well in our own tutoring behaviors, what's working well in terms of outcomes for students, and that's soft outcomes as well as hard outcomes. So in addition to test prep, we all know that we are here to support life outcomes, the whole child and how they develop. And Ali's giving us a little whoop whoop there because it is reassuring to know that that's who we are from the very start. I had a really interesting conversation recently with a well-known parenting expert, and she said, what you're pointing to is more than the tutoring that I thought tutoring was. It's not private tuition in the way that it used to be phrased. It's much more holistic than that. And the way she said it actually was, it's much more interesting than that. So as we explore what regulation and tutoring might look like, should look like, could look like, if it was a thing that was necessary, let's remember that we are talking about whole children and whole tutors. And to my mind, my biggest goal for this conversation is that we remember that we don't want to break tutoring like schools have to a certain extent been broken by accountability measures. My pleasure, Emma. And that if we can actually do something that articulates what might need to be regulated to create parity, to create clarity for students without breaking the freedoms that we have as tutors, then it becomes really interesting. So opening up to you guys, unmute yourself and dive in. What are your thoughts? What are your initial thoughts about regulation and tutoring?
I'm quite worried about it because I feel like there's already a lot of pressure to have to go on to into organisations that take a huge cut from your tutoring, and most of the parents seem to actually want to just contact you directly, and I just don't think. Well, I think having DBS is good, but most of my parents that I teach their children, they wouldn't even know that I had a DBS. You know, not even the basic.
How does that make you feel? What are your thoughts on the fact that DBS?
Well, I think DBS is necessary, but a lot of my parents wouldn't even ask me about it. I mean, I could voluntarily show it to them.
Well, which would feel a bit weird. Bit like, you know, are you being too much by brandishing your dick, doesn't it? You know, Carol, I think I could ultra background noise.
Mute myself.
I think that's better. Okay, awesome. But do unmute yourself when you're ready to speak again. But to sum up what I believe you've just said was, what's it going to cost us if regulation comes in terms of time and money? And is it going to create more barriers between parents and tutors finding each other? And did parents really care or know to ask? Does that sum up the beginnings of your thoughts, Carol?
Yes, except that what I'm particularly worried about is being forced to work for agencies when I think mostly I don't want to work for agencies and the parents don't want to work for agencies. Sometimes so I have to.
You, there seems to be that regulation, which never occurred to me before.
Julia, you are very, very picky, I'm sorry to say.
It's when Carol's unmuted for some reason.
Carol,
again, you've heard what I want to say, so.
I think the concern there is that if we have regulation, are we going to end up having to work for some of the big names? Or how do we manage the regulation as independent tutors or small businesses? There's absolute benefits to being part of the agencies if that's the route you want to take, but is regulation going to push us down that route? Carol saying.
Never occurred to me that regulation would go through agencies, because why would it be that an agency shouldn't have the freedom to take a cut of your hourly rate for the sake of regulation? And so I think it would be really interesting to explore what regulation of an independent tutor could look like that doesn't affect your hourly rate or take from your hourly rate. Dee, what are your thoughts?
It was what Carol said about a parent wouldn't know to ask about DBS. So is regulation, as well as regulating the tutors, alongside that, and it's something that QT is already doing, it's about educating those looking for tutors to do the right thing in terms of finding the right fit for their child, who is also safe as well as being skilled and supported. So I think, yes, my feeling is that I think some regulation is helpful, but alongside that, we need to educate those looking for tutors as to what regulation looks like and how it can benefit them.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully put. So we ran a think tank this time last year for parents, and they were all lovely people, but there was total apathy in the room in terms of finding out what looks good in tutoring. There was, you know, to them it seemed like this was a non-problem, which amazed me, because for me, you know, it's such a high stakes opportunity to provide the right tutor for your child. You should be able to find out as much as you want. And yet, well, Odette and I famously were on a tube recently, and we saw an advert for multivitamins. And you know, I thought about my lack of knowledge and actually lack of interest in finding out which vitamins I should be taking, right? But if you give me a multivitamin that says it's for my type of person at my age, then I will probably just take it and still never find out all the different vitamins that are included. And so I think that alongside educating parents, Dee, there's also a certain amount of simplifying things to make it easy for them to, because they are experts in many, many other things. They do not need to be experts in our domain. We need to make our domain accessible to them. Ali, what are your thoughts?
I have many thoughts on this topic, but I'm going to start with a question that I have in terms of like regulation, in terms of the content that we would be able to teach. Like, what would that look like? Would we have to go along with the national curriculum, or would regulation impact on like how we would be what we would be able to teach and how that take away that creative freedom? So that's my first question that I wanted to throw out to the group.
The answer, I think everybody in this room is screaming, no, that is not what we want. The curriculum regulated, nobody wants the how regulated, absolutely not. But it's a really important question, because if that happens, then it's just an extension of school and not what tutoring can be.
Yeah, because that would be my concern, if that's like what they would be looking at, because it's really for, it's, I think, the way that tutoring is going and homeschooling is going in the UK particularly, which is something that I get so passionate about, is that it is creating spaces for children who don't thrive in the mainstream system to access learning in a way that is understandable for them, and also in a way that they learn and celebrate their individuality. And giving them a freedom to also regulation in another word is to regulate themselves, you know? Yes. So yeah, that would be my one concern. And then could you just repeat what the last thing that you said, Julia, just to remind my brain, because it's gone off on a tangent.
We're talking about multivitamins. Dee was mentioning about educating parents so that they knew what to look for.
And then you've rejigged me. I think what also in my experience, what I've experienced in my tutoring space, is that in the schooling system, there is a lack of support and there is a lack of knowledge that's passed on to parents. So a lot of my parents are feeling frustrated because they are feeling like they're not getting an honest, clear picture of their child. What's happening at school is not always related back to the parent, and also in terms of what support they need. So a lot of parents are feeling like they have to advocate for their children in schools. And I think our roles as tutors is to, like you said, multivitamin, is to empower them with the knowledge that our expertise can give them. It's empowering them to also be able to go into a school and advocate for their kid, know what are the questions to ask, what's on an EHCP, you know, where is the funding going, how is it being used, talking about the whole child, which professional do I go to if I'm having an occupational therapy issue. So I think it's really as much as the parent's journey as is the child's journey. So we can access that by giving the information and educating parents, but also supporting them through our own tutoring role, by taking them along with the journey with them and offering them really honest feedback in a kind and constructive way.
That is just immense. And I know that there's many people in this room that will agree with your approach about, it's a really relationships focused approach, isn't it? For me, there's always this this sense that schools have difficult conversations with parents, and difficult conversations is coming from a place of misalignment. It's suggesting that the parents and the school are not on the same page. And anything that a tutor can do to build bridges there, I think becomes really, really interesting. So giving parents the tools to speak and know what to look for and know what to ask for in a way that's not confrontational then becomes really, really interesting. How does that come back to regulation? I think it's probably talking more about the positioning of a tutor in the relationship between the family and the school, which is really, really interesting. Jenna, can I call on you next?
Hi, apologies. I have been.
Yeah, are you okay?
Yeah, not great. I have been in hospital a lot recently. Came out last night. I'm going back in a bit. But I came home because I did also want to join. I have to be honest, I haven't listened to all of it, but it is something that I've been thinking about a lot, and it's kind of some of the things that you and I previously talked about, and kind of TTA, QT, and like all of this is kind of a lot. And I think it really, really depends. I think someone mentioned in chat about regulation, like being regulated in the similar way to childminders. And I have feelings about that specifically because of the nature of the young people I work with and being primarily a home educator. If I take one single child that has an EHCP and I am the primary source of formal education, I have to register as a school with Ofsted. And if you have five, register as a school and with Ofsted and be fully regulated. And all of the insane amount of work and your insurance changes, your insurance prices go up, you have to be registered completely differently. You have to collect completely different information about your young people. You have to have different qualifications. You have to have so many other things in place that it is genuinely prohibitive to the point of making tutoring and that kind of additional support often inaccessible to the people who need it.
I think that phrase prohibitive is really, really important here, that we shouldn't be, we should make sure that whatever is done to tutoring makes it more accessible, not less.
Yeah. And I think already we're seeing some challenges with misunderstanding and misconstruing of what tutoring is, what it's about, all the way up to the changes in some of the legal frameworks that's happened over the last couple of years in terms of the way that we have to be registered and structured as companies, right? You have two options. I can't remember the technical names, but be an agency or be the other one that isn't just tutoring. And for organizations like myself, that's especially challenged because I'm neither of those things. And the kind of only third option we've got is to register as a school, even if we don't meet the threshold. And oh my God, the amount of work, the amount of everything, and we can't pass that any of that on, and we have to be so specialist. And I think it's genuinely made me question my journey and whether I can actually provide what I know. Like, I know I make a difference to young people, and I know that what I do is needed. But even now, with the little things that are already happening, it's already becoming prohibitive. And, you know, with my health, like so many tutors, like we tutor because, you know, the schools don't work for us as well as our young people. For whatever reason, whether it's because you're not able to get the same qualifications. So for me, I don't have QTS, I don't have a degree because I can't access that because of my needs. And that doesn't make me less of an educator. And, you know, there's various things like that that really mean that we're, like, the tutoring industry, you know, a significant portion of us are disabled, a significant portion of us have additional needs, or, you know, we do this because we're not teachers often. And those of us who, those tutors who have left being teachers to tutor have left for a goddamn good reason. Why are they trying to make us into schools?
Emma like Harper, that. Yeah. Want to dive in?
I think there's a fine balance. I think there's got to be a way to regulate so that students are safe, so that parents know that tutors are safe and that they're getting quality. But I think it is a very dangerous line. And if it goes too far the other way and we start talking Ofsted and we start talking that sort of regulation, it's dangerous because it's pressure in that we've all run away from. Jenna's completely right. Like, if it went back that way, I wouldn't be running my business.
Yeah. And also, either we've run away from it or we couldn't cope in that because of our own specific limitations, which, you know, need to be factored in. So
I was being cautious just because that when we talked about the comparison with childminders, most childminders in there have to have Ofsted. They have to they are Ofsted-ed. So they might not necessarily have the constraints of the classroom, but they still have Ofsted. And I don't, especially with everything going on with Ofsted in the news and the public domain at the moment, I agree we definitely don't want to have that pressure. I'm with the regulation, there needs to be a bare minimum, but then tutors have freedom to do what they need to do to get to the outcomes that have been requested by the client. Within reason, Emma, just before you.
No, I was just going to say, you made me think of something then. Like, a lot of the students we're dealing with, they need a tutor for a reason. So if we go down the route of regulation that takes us more school-like, then you've completely defeated the whole purpose of tutoring.
Yeah.
And it was something you said that triggered it, Helen. Sorry.
Tutors that are doing exam prep, yes, we can be in addition to what the school is doing. Fantastic. But often we're there because the kid can't access it for whatever reason in school. Sorry, I shouldn't. The student can't access it in school, whether that's a mental health, a SEND issue, just the noise in the classroom. They're not getting the one-to-one that they need for that. Yeah, we need the freedom. If they're not understanding it, then we need to, be able to come at it from a completely different angle. We need that freedom. There's a lot with that. The other thought I had is also there are a large proportion of tutors that aren't QTS. And in the room, I can see three at least, which includes myself. For whatever reason, we've come into tutoring from a different perspective than being a classroom teacher first. And we don't want to... That brings a difference sometimes. That will bring, so I know, sorry, Georgina, I'm going to pick on you here because I know you don't. Georgina doesn't have QTS either, but she comes from a STEM background in the world of work and her students need that. And they're coming to her for that difference. So insisting that a tutor has QTS is not going to be a good thing either, because we're going to lose those tutors that are coming from a different perspective than from inside the classroom. So and that's one of my big ones, because I know that I'm brilliant at my job, but I couldn't manage in the classroom. I had to withdraw. I don't hold QTS. But I'm bloody
good. I feel so proud of you just now. Can we just pocket that moment? Helen just said, I know I'm brilliant at my job and I couldn't cope in a classroom, and that's totally fine. And yeah, you are brilliant at your job, my darling. Yes,
but there we go.
Where is the background noise at the moment? Is it on me?
It wasn't me that time.
Oh, thank you, Carol. Thank you for checking.
I'll say something, which is that I think it would be really bad if there was a regulation that said if you're teaching English, you have to have a degree in English or something, because our skills develop in all kinds of directions, and it's partly guided by the need. And say you, because I've never taught English literature in school, but I've been asked by so many parents to teach English literature. I'm now really quite an expert at that, and English language, and the school gives lots of guidance as well with English language. There's good resources and things that make it possible, even though I don't have a degree in English. So I think it would be a shame when there's a desperate need for English tuition if there was a real strong limitation according to having exactly the specific qualification that's a Julia. Teacher subject in the school.
Ali in the chat, just because I know you're on your you were on your phone, are you back on your computer? Is this going to confuse me, or is she frozen?
Julia has frozen.
Oh, that's always entertaining. So Ali has put in the chat that
I'm just letting her back in.
How as a tutoring industry,
so Julia's not hearing your question, Helen.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thank you for forgiving me for doing the Zoom dance today.
Just saying that Ali has put in the chat, and if you're on your phone, I know you can't see it. How do we then as an industry, as tutors, offer or create accessible or relevant training to empower people with those bare
Well, I'm so ratings. Glad you asked, Ali Boys Varley.
A little bit of a leading question there for you.
And I'm grateful for that, because usually I just do like to have a really, really open discussion without an agenda. But this genuinely has been the journey that I've been on for 4 years now. And it's coming from a really intentional place. Parents and tutors don't have a rock solid relationship because this isn't in place, because of a lack of regulation. And for us to, as a profession, and I don't use the word industry, I use the word profession really intentionally, because that's how we need to see ourselves. For us to be able to articulate what good looks like, so and then hold ourselves to account for that, and then say to parents, like Dee was saying before, say to parents, this is what you should look like, look for. This is what good looks like. Now, I must be honest with you, once we nail this level, I will keep pushing the boat up, because that's what's mostly in service of our students. And it's also what's in service of us as practitioners, because nobody wants to stagnate. But initially, you can see now why I came to this concept of safe, skilled and supported, because it's not about QTS. It's not about what subject you tutor. It's not about regulating your curriculum. It's just about making sure that you as a practitioner can deliver what's needed. So the credentials program that we have, the certification program that we have that covers, Andy, I know that you're going through this at the moment, enhanced DBS on the update service, safeguarding training. Those are the two things that you would expect from any adult working in a school with children, right? Then insurance, because we're not working in a school, we are freelance educators, and that comes with all sorts of responsibilities. Terms and conditions, why? Because a parent needs you to be trustworthy, to be considered. You can't consistently things like no shows. Yeah, you need to have a plan in place about what your policy is for if a student doesn't show up, and how many hours of warning of information. Excuse me, how much notice you need before a cancellation. I'm so sorry, I'm struggling with my words. And then finally, that piece around verified client reviews. Now, a verified client review simply means that you've done a good job for someone recently, yeah? And by calibrating a minimum of 5 of that, it means that you are consistently an effective professional. Now, I want to go further than that. I want to require qualifications in tutoring that are, subject agnostic. I also think that we built some skills tests, didn't we, Georgina, a while ago? And that's been a really, really interesting experiment that's still sort of sitting on the back burner, but needs to come forward, which evaluates whether or not you've got QTS. Are you an effective tutor of your subject at this level? Yeah, which means, can you break it down into its smallest parts? Can you identify misconceptions? Can you identify how many marks an answer is worth? Yeah, all of those test prep things that should be bread and butter for a tutor. And to be honest, those skills tests are so good, I can't answer any of them because they're too difficult, which is always a good sign. But that answer, Ali, of how do we define our own excellence and then create regulation around that becomes really interesting. But of course, your specialism, Ali, and there's more people in this room with the same approach, is well-being. And that's not really something that you can regulate for. You could have a qualification in coaching and still not be an effective coach. And so there is a certain element about this that is about testimonials, and it is about social proof. My big bugbear is the most effective tutors are not the ones who are best at marketing. And it is not a skill that we need in school to learn how to use Canva, right? Although some of us do like to play on Canva, I have heard. And so it's almost a distraction from being an effective tutor. And so, is regulation going to, would regulation help with that? Would it hinder with that? Who does anybody have anything to contribute in terms of what regulation looks like in other countries in tutoring? I know that we've had a few countries that have opted into tutoring to regulation in tutoring recently.
Yeah, maybe I can jump in since I'm from China. As far as I know, I don't think there's any like strict regulation of tutors in China either. To become a school teacher, yes, you need to go through a lot of exams, to be admitted to a school. But in terms of out-of-school tutoring, I think it's very loose in general. Any teacher, for example, I'm a college graduate, I can tutor a student. So you don't need any qualification to become a tutor, as long as the parent trusts you. So I think, again, as someone mentioned, this relationship building earlier in the chat. So I think that's something that parents rely on, or also word of mouth, if other parents refer this tutor to you. So I think that kind of serves as another kind of qualification. But in terms of like exam certificates, I don't think we have any in China.
I think that there was regulation that came in tutoring in China last year or the year before.
Right. So that is about the kind of limit on tutoring, not like you regulate the industry, but it's more like, as long as it's related to school subjects, you're not allowed to do that as a business. But I think still a lot of parents are looking for individual tutors. So even though it's limited, I think there's still some shady things going on, which is not very well supervised by the government.
Okay. So now that is really interesting, right? And you'll forgive me because I am as bad at geography as I am at history. But when regulation comes in and forces people to go underground, do we not have the same situation as we had with prohibition in America? What are your thoughts on that? Somebody who is better informed than me, please.
Georgina's put something in the chat. As soon as there are rules, someone will find a way to break them.
I'm wondering what moonshine is going to look like in tutoring terms. And then, of course, you know, then you get some shady behaviours. I mean, again, the first piece of reading that ever existed in tutoring, well, so in 2019, when I started out, there were really only two documents you could read about in tutoring. One was the Sutton Trust's study from 2018, which talks about tutoring as shadow schooling. And the other was Bloom's Two Sigma Problem, which said that tutoring is far more effective than classroom teaching, which is a problem. But that piece around the Sutton Trust calling schools shadow schooling is problematic because nobody can thrive in the shadows. And an educator is not safe in the shadows. It's not safe to work with a child in the shadows, and it is not safe for you as a practitioner to be in an enlightened environment, whatever that would mean. So this concept of bringing out a seen version of tutoring, a recognized version of tutoring, right? You're saying, Jan, that it's a massive need. So I guess let's come full circle, because we are past the half hour now. Let's come full circle to how not to break the individuality of tutoring whilst bringing what Helen described as a baseline in. So, you know, Ali started off by saying, don't kill my curriculum. I've made my own curriculum. It's well suited to the students I work with. Jen is saying, getting yourself set up properly is prohibitive because the paperwork is beyond me. How do we create a set of regulations? What would a set of regulations look like, which, as Emma said, make sure that the child is safe? And I would go further to say, make sure that the adult is safe as well. I once worked with a tutor who said that she always did her first few sessions in a library before she went into the child's home, because she herself did not want to go into a stranger's home, which is very appropriate. And frankly, I've never heard anybody else tell me that they do that. And why wouldn't you? So how do you make sure that you're safe? How do you make sure that a child is safe? How do you make sure that parents get a quality experience without reducing variety?
Can I share, because I had, like, from where Helen said earlier, I didn't have any experience in education when I started. I started tutoring in 2012. There was no TTA, and Julia hadn't started this community yet, so I was still waiting for it.
Pregnant.
You were busy having children. So I didn't really know how to actually be a good tutor. I kind of had to find
things to figure out, and there wasn't really anything that told me what that was, and the only thing that I had to base it on is what do people do in school. So I know full well that that first year I was not a very good tutor, and there was nothing to tell me how to be any better, but besides try something that didn't go very well, try something else. There wasn't even anyone to talk to about it because I didn't know anybody that was a tutor. I just knew a bunch of people that worked in classrooms, and when I say, how do you do good lessons, they say, I make myself a lesson plan and a big PowerPoint and we have this behavior management. I was like, well, that's irrelevant. I'm in their kitchen. I don't need to do that. So it was really helpful for me once this appeared for you to be explaining to me, this is what how learning works. This is what a good outcome looks like. This is what children need as a safe and comfortable environment to learn in. I'm like, oh, thank you. Now I know that I have figured out how to do it well, but it's taken me however many years. It's helpful to have that from the beginning without it necessarily being described. I don't think that the name regulation is a very friendly word to use because it's like saying, these are the rules, this is what you have to do. But having something that says, this is how you can do a good job, these are some options that are available to you, this is what your tutee usually would need, these are the obstacles they might face and how you address them, is much more friendly. That I think the only kind of these are what you should be doing things come under the safeguarding bracket. The rest of it should be more about guidance than regulation.
Yeah, that's really, really helpful. Who else wants to jump in there?
That's because it's more like guidelines anyway, isn't it? The life of the Caribbean. Screw the rules, it's more like guidelines anyway. Yeah, Brian had his hand up a moment ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't see Brian.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Me? Okay, fine. I'm just going to say safety for tutors. In my nearly 20 years now of tutoring, I have quite often come across teenagers who don't really want to be tutored. The parents want them to get better grades and think that they're not doing well enough at school, but the young person thinks they're doing just fine and they don't want their free time interfered with by some old boy who's coming along to talk to them about Shakespeare or whatever it is.
Brian, we lost
on
you
the
after.
Plan of making a complaint against the tutor in order for. I thought I was. Am I communicating now?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Just listen, Julia, raise your hand if I stop being intelligible, right? Okay. And make just a little hand gesture. Yeah. 20 years of tutoring, I quite often get. But the kids don't want tutoring. And
Brian, maybe
it interferes with their free time, effectively. Okay. I better do it. I'm going to do it in the chat. I'll make my point in the chat. I'm sorry. I'm not communicating well with you.
Fantastic. Georgina, would you mind reading out what Brian puts in the chat afterwards? Thank you. Hannah's just told me that there's 26 people following us on LinkedIn as well. So that's the conversation is even bigger than it feels like in this room. I wonder whether that regulation is not a friendly word is an important piece to explore because of the many of us that have escaped school because of its rigidity and expectations. I don't know if you've heard me use this metaphor before. I like to talk about doves, phoenixes, and canaries. So the canary is the young person or the adult in the classroom who can't tolerate the one size fits none experience of school. Those of us who are sensitive, those of us who have extra needs, those of us who don't feel like good enough is good enough, struggle because the toxic cultures in schools poison us. And so we crash or we leave. Or we don't even go into school because we can see that that's not a route that we can cope with. And so we have to build ourselves up again. And that's the phoenix. That's the person who takes their experience and rebuilds a new life. Many of us do that in tutoring. And we have this passion because what we want to do is create an environment where the young people get a safer, healthier experience, the one that we craved ourselves. And then finally, that piece around the dove is the person who takes that new life, that new way of doing education, and turns it into something that gives hope to others. So everybody in this room is a dove, in my opinion, because what we're doing is we're pointing to better ways, gentler ways, more holistic ways of educating. And Jan's doing it with her gamification of her platform, and Georgina is doing it with Green Tutors, and Jenna is doing it for home educated students, and each of us are doing it in our own way. And it's all about helping to make learning more accessible for students. Now, regulation as this great big scary authoritative top-down approach must not be allowed to ruin or take us all back to being canaries again. What it must do is enable us and stretch us and challenge us, because that's good for us as well. And I do believe that no regulation whatsoever, or whatever you want to call it, is a problem for tutors, because Georgina is a scientist. And so when Georgina said to herself in year one, I'm not sure I'm doing this right, she tested and she retested and she found answers. But there are others of us who quit after year one because we're not sure we're doing it right, or because it's lonely, or because we just, you know, don't have the infrastructure that's needed. And then there's others of us who, well, not in this room, who would just continue delivering a subpar experience for students because nobody's defined what good looks like. And so for me, that journey of us in this room defining what good looks like is the same story that 10 years ago you could have had in childcare, right? So if the best childcare practitioners came together, and I don't know if anybody's following Nanny Shah, but she runs these amazing conferences for nannies, which I just find so exciting, because we all need to get together and celebrate our professions. And that's what industry looks like today. It looks like community. So I think that piece around, you know, Georgina, when you said you sought the answers to what good looks like, I think is really important. And I think it's really important to share with you that I didn't. When I was a tutor in my kitchen and my kids were asleep upstairs, I've really struggled. I really struggled to be sure that it was, that I was doing it right. And I struggled to feel confident taking money from parents. And that's because primary school tutoring, you don't have exam results to measure your success by. And so it becomes quite difficult to keep your motivation up when it's just based on how happy the child is, right? You can measure progress in confidence around maths. You can measure literacy or spelling test results, but it gets more and more complex. And so I think what's interesting, and I think what's always interesting about tutoring, is how varied it is. And, you know, when Odette and I speak to Bet about representing tutors, we try to explain to them how complex the space is and how many, because really it's a cottage industry. Really, each of us are in our own little cottage delivering tutoring to the students who find us. And so gathering that industry and turning it into a profession becomes this shared journey. One more thing before I start wrapping up is, and you'll have heard me speak about this before as well, the most effective, the biggest game changer in education is when the educators know that they can make a difference. So this insight is based on the work of John Hattie, who did a massive meta study, the biggest in the world, on what all of the evidence shows us works well in education. Now, research-informed education is a massive development in what's been happening in schools at the moment. And the reason for that is that best guess approach to education is not good enough, because our instincts don't always tell us the right thing. The perfect example of that is learning styles. So there was about 5 or 6 or 7 years when everything you heard about in professional development in schools was about learning styles. You need to know whether your student is a visual, an auditory, a kinesthetic. There's one more. It's VARC. What's the R? No,
three.
The key point there is there was no evidence behind that. Somebody wrote a blog, somebody else thought it was a good idea, and it spread like wildfire. There is no evidence behind learning styles. And if you look it up, you'll see it. And yet you still hear people talking about, thank you, reading, writing, thank you. You still hear people talking about learning styles today because these ideas get stuck in people's minds. They think it's what good looks like. And if you don't have research behind it and evidence behind it, you're squandering your good energy, right? So John Hattie, who did this great big meta study of what does work well in education, the biggest indicator of success for students is collective teacher efficacy. Now, if you forgive me, I'm going to change the word teacher for tutor. And what I'm going to say to you is when tutors define for themselves what good looks like and share those beliefs and share those actions together, we all as a profession make more of a difference for our students. The collective efficacy means we as practitioners know what good looks like. And I'm going to pick on Dee, which I always do, because I'm going to tell you that this time last year, September. Dee had three new students in 1 week come for a test lesson. Two of them went for it and the last one didn't. Am I right? And that last one, Dee said, if it hadn't been for the work that I'd done, working with other tutors to understand what good looks like, that rejection would have really demoralized me. And the only reason why it didn't demoralize her was because she was doing the work to know that she was doing a good job. So she had that confidence. So the collective efficacy does two things. It makes sure that we do our best work for students because we ask the questions of each other to make sure that we're always learning together. And it makes us rock solid so that when things don't go our way, we know how to reflect on those and what to take personally and what not to take personally, which is what we as human beings need. So I think my call to action for you today is to find out about supervision circles. So this time next week, no, not this time, Wednesday at 11 a.m. next week, we will be launching our new program of supervision circles, which is free for all qualified tutor members to attend. The structure of a supervision circle, which is run by our former teacher and tutor coach, Jacqueline McGill, is about giving tutors an opportunity to debrief. So the concept of supervision comes from healthcare. If you're working as a psychiatrist or a psychotherapist or any kind of occupational therapist working closely with students, with your clients one-to-one, you need a supervisor because you need to debrief because otherwise you carry all of their stuff. We work closely with students and we also need to debrief. And so to my mind, the most interesting thing that's happening in developments in tutoring right now is the opportunity for supervision. So I would invite you to participate next week, 11 a.m. With our supervision circles, where you will get a chance to reflect on what's worked well for you in a really safe space. We did run a trial last term. People said it made a massive difference to them. And Georgina, I hope you don't mind if I quote you. When you make a difference to your professional practice, it changes your whole life, doesn't it? It makes you happier overall because it makes you feel safe and less anxious. So I think that by bringing these things in, by bringing these opportunities in, we actually elevate ourselves from the inside out. So whatever regulation comes in, we're always going to be ahead of the game. Because the people in this room, and hopefully the people who are listening in LinkedIn, are the most passionate practitioners in tutoring today. I am really, really proud to be associated with you. Thank you so much for participating in this discussion again today. Thank you, Helen. Thank you, Dee. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Sharona. Thank you, Georgina. Thank you, Jenna. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Ali. Thank you, Susan. Welcome, Susan. Thank you, Jan. And who's here at the bottom? I can't see. Thank you, Rochelle. Sorry for my crazy tech situation today. See you guys all again next week. Bye.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks
Bye.
So much. Bye.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you. Bye.
First time I made it.
So glad you did.